Chapter 8. A serious young man. Honest pre-superior, I see that, Monsieur Prince, said the general. Mr. Razumov is quite safe with me. I am interested in him. He has, it seems, the great and useful quality of inspiring confidence. What I was wondering at is why the other should mention anything at all, I mean even the bare fact alone, if his object was only to obtain temporary shelter for a few hours. For, after all, nothing was easier than to say nothing about it unless, indeed, he were trying, under a crazy misapprehension of your true sentiments, to enlist your assistance, eh, Mr. Razumov? It seemed to Razumov that the floor was moving slightly. This grotesque man in a tight uniform was terrible. It was right that he should be terrible. I can see what your excellency has in your mind. But I can only answer that I don't know why. I have nothing in my mind, murmured the general, with gentle surprise. I am his prey, his helpless prey, thought Razumov. The fatigues and the disgusts of that afternoon, the need to forget, the fear which he could not keep off, reawakened his hate for Alden. Then I can't help your excellency. I don't know what he meant. I only know there was a moment when I wished to kill him. There was also a moment when I wished myself dead. I said nothing. I was overcome. I provoked no confidence. I asked for no explanations. Razumov seemed beside himself, but his mind was lucid. It was really a calculated outburst. It is rather a pity, the general said, that you did not. Don't you know at all what he means to do? Razumov calmed down and saw an opening there. He told me he was in hopes that a sledge would meet him about half an hour after midnight at the 7th lamp post on the left from the upper end of Karabolnaya. At any rate, he meant to be there at that time. He did not even ask me for a change of clothes. Ah, voila, said the general, turning to Prince K with an air of satisfaction. Here is a way to keep your protege, Mr. Razumov, quite clear of any connection with the actual arrest. We shall be ready for that gentleman in Karabolnaya. The prince expressed his gratitude. There was real emotion in his voice. Razumov, motionless, silent, sat staring at the carpet. The general turned to him. Half an hour after midnight. Till then we have to depend on you, Mr. Razumov. You don't think he is likely to change his purpose? How can I tell? Said Razumov. Those men are not of the sort that ever changes its purpose. What men do you mean? Fanatical lovers of liberty in general. Liberty with a capital L, Excellency. Liberty that means nothing precise. Liberty in whose name crimes are committed. The general murmured, I detest rebels of every kind. I can't help it. It's my nature. He clenched a fist and shook it, drawing back his arm. They shall be destroyed, then. They have made a sacrifice of their lives beforehand, said Razumov with malicious pleasure and looking the general straight in the face. If Alden does change his purpose tonight, you may depend on it that it will not be to save his life by flight in some other way. He would have thought then of something else to attempt. But that is not likely. The general repeated, as if to himself, they shall be destroyed. Razumov assumed an impenetrable expression. The prince exclaimed, what a terrible necessity. The general's arm was lowered slowly. One comfort there is. That brood leaves no posterity. I've always said it, one effort, pitiless, persistent, steady, and we are done with them forever. Razumov thought to himself that this man entrusted with so much arbitrary power must have believed what he said, or else he could not have gone on bearing the responsibility. I detest rebels. These subversive minds. These intellectual debauches. My existence has been built on fidelity. It's a feeling. To defend it, I am ready to lay down my life, and even my honor, if that were needed. But pray tell me, what honor can there be as against rebels, against people that deny God himself, perfect unbelievers? Brutes. It is horrible to think of. During this tirade, Razumov, facing the general, had nodded slightly twice. Prince K, standing on one side with his grand air, murmured, casting up his eyes, he was. Then lowering his glance, and with great decision declared, this young man, general, is perfectly fit to apprehend the bearing of your memorable words. The general's whole expression changed from dull resentment to perfect urbanity. I would ask now, Mr. Razumov, he said, to return to his home. Note that I don't ask Mr. Razumov whether he has justified his absence to his guest. No doubt he did this sufficiently. But I don't ask. Mr. Razumov inspires confidence. It is a great gift. I only suggest that a more prolonged absence might awaken the criminal's suspicions and induce him perhaps to change his plans. He rose and with a scrupulous courtesy escorted his visitors to the anteroom encumbered with flower pots. Razumov parted with the prince at the corner of a street. In the carriage he had listened to speeches, where natural sentiment struggled with caution. Evidently the prince was afraid of encouraging any hopes of future intercourse. But there was a touch of tenderness in the voice uttering in the dark the guarded general phrases of goodwill. And the prince too said, I have perfect confidence in you, Mr. Razumov. They all, it seems, have confidence in me, thought Razumov dully. He had an indulgent contempt for the man sitting shoulder to shoulder with him in the confined space. Probably he was afraid of scenes with his wife. She was said to be proud and violent. It seemed to him bizarre that secrecy should play such a large part in the comfort and safety of lives. But he wanted to put the prince's mind at ease, and with a proper amount of emphasis he said that, being conscious of some small abilities, and confident in his power of work, he trusted his future to his own exertions. He expressed his gratitude for the helping hand. Such dangerous situations did not occur twice in the course of one life, he added. And you have met this one with a firmness of mind and correctness of feeling which give me a high idea of your worth, the prince said solemnly. You have now only to persevere, to persevere. On getting out on the pavement, Razumov saw an ungloved hand extended to him through the lowered window of the brougham. It detained his own in its grasp for a moment, while the light of a street lamp fell upon the prince's long face and old-fashioned gray whiskers. I hope you are perfectly reassured now, as to the consequences. After what your excellency has condescended to do for me, I can only rely on my conscience. Adieu, said the whiskered head with feeling. Razumov bowed. The brougham glided away with a slight swish in the snow. He was alone on the edge of the pavement. He said to himself that there was nothing to think about, and began walking towards his home. He walked quietly. It was a common experience to walk thus home to bed after an evening spent somewhere with his fellows or in the cheaper seats of a theater. After he had gone a little way, the familiarity of things got hold of him. Nothing was changed. There was the familiar corner, and when he turned it, he saw the familiar dim light of the provision shop kept by a German woman. There were loaves of stale bread, bunches of onions and strings of sausages behind the small window panes. They were closing it. The sickly lame fellow whom he knew so well by sight staggered out into the snow embracing a large shutter. Nothing would change. There was the familiar gateway yawning black with feeble glimmers marking the arches of the different staircases. The sense of life's continuity depended on trifling bodily impressions. The trivialities of daily existence were an armor for the soul. And this thought reinforced the inward quietness of Razumov as he began to climb the stairs familiar to his feet in the dark, with his hand on the familiar clammy banister. The exceptional could not prevail against the material contacts which make one day resemble another. Tomorrow would be like yesterday. It was only on the stage that the unusual was outwardly acknowledged. I suppose, thought Razumov, that if I had made up my mind to blow out my brains on the landing, I would be going up these stairs as quietly as I am doing it now. What's a man to do? What must be. Extraordinary things do happen. But when they have happened, they are done with. Thus too, when the mind is made up, that question is done with, and the daily concerns, the familiarities of our thought, swallow it up and the life goes on, as before with its mysterious and secret sides quite out of sight, as they should be. Life is a public thing. Razumov unlocked his door, and took the key out, entered very quietly, and bolted the door behind him carefully. He thought, he hears me, and after bolting the door he stood still holding his breath. There was not a sound. He crossed the bare outer room, stepping deliberately in the darkness. Entering the other, he felt all over his table for the matchbox. The silence, but for the groping of his hand, was profound. Could the fellow be sleeping so soundly? He struck a light and looked at the bed. Halden was lying on his back as before, only both his hands were under his head. His eyes were open. He stared at the ceiling. Razumov held the match up. He saw the clear-cut features, the firm chin, the white forehead and the top knot of fair hair against the white pillow. There he was, lying flat on his back. Razumov thought suddenly, I have walked over his chest. He continued to stare till the match burned itself out, then struck another, and lit the lamp in silence without looking towards the bed anymore. He had turned his back on it, and was hanging his coat on a peg, when he heard Halden sigh profoundly, then ask in a tired voice, well, and what have you arranged? The emotion was so great, that Razumov was glad to put his hands against the wall. A diabolical impulse to say, I have given you up to the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.